I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Holding to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman Show. They ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined by, from the Nerd Party, Mr. Daniel Prue. What's up, Daniel?
Hey, Zach. How's it going?
Good. I call you Daniel, like, twice. I never do that. What's up, Dan?
That's fine. They're both my name. It's okay. I'm not like Data. I'm not a stickler for pronunciation, so you could just...
One is my name. Yeah. The other is not.
Yeah. So they're both my name. It's fine.
Well, I'm Zachary Moore here with Daniel Prue, and we're here to talk about another new power episode of Smallville. That's a little sub-series theme we've tried to have when you're on the show.
Yeah.
And here we are. Sneeze, he got his super breath. Now, this is, it's funny, you get to season six, and you're like, all right, what's left? You look at the powers of Superman, right?
I'm waiting for the episode. I really hope you have me back for the episode where he learns how to get his cellophane S that he throws at people, you know.
Yeah, we got you on that for season eight, and then we got you on the memory erasing kiss for season nine. So don't worry,
fantastic.
You're locked in for those. But you know, they got to season five, right? Because every season up till then, he got a new power, right? Thinking about it, X-ray in the first season.
Yep.
Heat vision in the second season. Super hearing in the third season. And then you're like, what about season four? Well, technically, he got flight in season four. If you want to look at it that way, we talked about it there.
Yep.
And then season five, again, going into it, they were like, well, you know, this is probably going to be the last season. They were concerned with other things. He didn't really get a new power in season five. He did time travel for the first time, but he didn't do that himself. He didn't fly around the earth and do that himself. So we get to season six, and like, oh, well, we're going to go a little longer now. We gotta look into the second tier powers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because these are powers that, you know, watching shows and cartoons and stuff, you don't see him use that much. It's easy to have like, hey, Dean Cain, turn your head to the left and listen to this conversation on Lois and Clark, or, you know, something like that. Super breath requires a little more. And sometimes it's a goofy looking power, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially when they add in a matrix effect and, you know, it's just air. It's like, that's a bit much. It's a bit over the top, but I think maybe it was intentional.
Well, yeah, I think that was the thing with the Smallville, right? It had the technology to show these powers, and some of them it's amazing. Like, I remember when I first saw in season one him running faster than a speeding bullet, I'm like, oh my god, he's running faster than a speeding bullet. It's amazing. And it's the matrix, right? The effect, it's got the air waves and the bullet, right? And then a lot of that works. Heat vision, I think they did a great job with bringing that, updating that. It's not laser vision,
right?
It's heat vision,
right? Yep.
But the super hearing is something they've always kind of struggled with. Because they've gone through many iterations of showing it on the show, right? That they started out with, like, an eardrum, then they did, like, zoom-ins on people's mouths, and even in this episode, he uses it, but they don't show us a special effect.
Yeah.
They don't even bother to give us stock footage of, like, the CGI eardrum. They just, like, okay, you guys get it, right? You can hear that. But with flight, too, they did, to your point, they did the Matrix thing, like, here's all the air coming together and crusade, and then he takes off like that, and I don't know. That looks cool. Although with Superman, there's something about the simple elegance of him just lifting up that I like.
Yeah.
You don't really need all that matrix stuff. So I see both sides of that. And then here they're like, how do we make super breath look cool? So that was the struggle. And we'll talk about it in here, right?
Yeah.
But this is like it. There's no more powers after this, because I don't
know. Yeah. We joke about it because, like, you know, of course, if we go into like comics territory, he has some pretty amazing abilities, but you know, it depends on the iteration and stuff like that. I think this is probably a good stopping point with the super breath. There's anything else gets kind of crazy, I think. So
yeah, yeah, we're splitting into two and
yep.
things of that nature. So, yeah, so there you go. I liked how he got a new power every season. You know, it's like I said before, I wish if there was a Smallville video game, right, you would like unlock a new power on every level and that kind of. Why was there never a Smallville video game, Dan? We would have played the hell out of that when we were.
We definitely would have, so. But unfortunately not.
And speaking of Super Breath, in Smallville, the official companion, season 6 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold. Co-writer of this episode, Todd Slavkin, said, quote, "We talked about doing an episode where Clark was sick as far back as season 4 with an idea called Cold." That's a classic Smallville title for you right there. He goes on to say, "We changed it from Arctic Breath to just room temperature Super Breath." So, freeze breath, super breath, right? I mean, I thought those were like different levels of the same power, but I guess they're different. I know he uses, I think so, uses freeze breath at some point in the show over the last 4 or 5 years. I don't know. But
yeah, I guess freeze breath is really technically what it should be, right? But here it's just really a lot of air being pushed.
Yeah, because it's heat vision, freeze breath.
Right.
That's the difference.
Right.
So, I mean, because I think... The most famous, you tell me, Superman freeze breath. I think Superman 2, where he freezes the like a truck that's about to blow up or something. That's the oh, and then Superman 3, he freezes a lake. So I guess it is freeze breath.
Yeah, yeah. It's so he has the ability to just cool something down really quickly, and
right.
This kind of serves that purpose in the episode, but more just really a lot of air being pushed around. So maybe this could be developed into freeze breath later on. You could have like a level up episode later on where he learns to like. Control the temperature somehow. I'm not sure how, but
hey, Sneeze is not only famous for adding super breath. The Green Arrow is here, Dan.
Yes, the original CW version of the Green Arrow. I had no idea. It's so funny because I when we picked this episode, I had no idea that he was even going to show up. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, why is he going? It looks an awful lot like that clock area where the Green Arrow hangs out. And I'm like, oh my god, there he is! Look at that. How funny.
Now, do you watch any of the Arrowverse shows currently or Arrow?
So I watched the first four, maybe five seasons of Arrow. Whenever, I think I got to season 2 of Flash. So
okay.
Whatever that was the last time I watched any of those shows. They were good and I really enjoyed them. But
that was around season 4 of Arrow. And that was, I watched Arrow religiously up till season 4. And then they made some, 3 and 4 were a step down from seasons 1 and 2. I did like Flash 1 and 2, but then they started adding more shows and I got out of it. I've talked about Arrowverse on here a lot, but you know, I'm kind of rewatching Arrow now because our friends over at Always Own the Arrow talking about Arrow. And so it's very strange to me. And I'm watching Stephen Amell over here and then I'm watching Justin Hartley over here.
Oh, yeah.
And in the meantime, I've watched This Is Us. Have you ever watched This Is Us,
no.
The NBC show?
Nope.
He is great in that.
Oh, really?
Like, he deserves an Emmy for that.
Wow.
Like, I always liked Justin Hartley, don't get me wrong, right? But I'm like, man, this guy, he can act. And so it's crazy, because to hear characters come on here and talk about Oliver Queen, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You're not Stephen Amell.
It's very different, yep.
Oh, man, but that's fine, though, right? That's the great thing about a character like Green Arrow, because there's no one is going to come out and say, this isn't the definitive Green Arrow, because, I mean, is there one, right? That's the beauty of characters like that. So much fun stuff. DC mythology to go into with this episode, but let's get into it. Sneeze.
What happened? Is everything all right?
I sneezed.
And?
And? Chloe, that's not normal.
Well, Clark, nothing with you is exactly normal, but I wouldn't call sneezing today's headline.
You don't understand. I...
You what? Grab a tissue and get over it. Gesundheit.
I tried to warn you. I've come down with some sort of cold.
And become a walking air cannon. Clark, let's get you out of here before we blow again.
At least I was able to cover half my face that time. This morning, I blew the barn door halfway across Lowell County. It almost hit Lois.
Lois as in Lane?
Now she's on a one-woman crusade to find an explanation. You know her. She won't stop digging until she hits China.
Yeah, okay. I'll take care of Lois. You just take care of that cold. We have enough natural disasters around here without having to worry about Hurricane Clark looming off the coast. No!
Just kidding.
Sneeze is the second episode of Smallville's sixth season. It aired on October 5th, 2006, was written by Todd Slavkin and Darren Swimmer, and directed by Paul Shapiro. Now, the episode starts out, we have a dark Thursday news report. And I like that we're carrying on some aftermath from the season finale and premiere, because, you know, sometimes Smallville didn't do this. sometimes it did, like season three, where it was like a two-parter to start. I was like, oh, that's good. We kind of you have these major life-changing things that happen in a finale, and then a lot of shows are like, okay, we got one episode, we're back to normal, and then it's like Freak of the Week or whatever, right? But that wasn't the case here, and even though this isn't like a continuation per se, the plot of this episode kind of carries that on. Lex gets kidnapped because of the Pentagon things he did to Zod and all that. So I like that continuation, even in an episodic show.
Yeah, it is nice when they carry it forward a little bit, because obviously the events of that was pretty significant. You know, you wouldn't want to just drop it and pretend like it didn't happen, so.
Yeah, and, you know, and something that we had said about Zod possessing Lex, them flying around, like, surely somebody saw him, right? And they pick up that thread here. They pick up that thread. So good on them, show. You know, I'm so quick to criticize this show. And then when it has an answer for me, I tip my cap. So anyway, we'll take a screenshot of that. I love taking these screenshots. Not Channel 52 yet, by the way. Just a generic, you know, news station.
Oh, yeah.
So Clark, he comes in, he's sick. He has been doing repairs and construction repairs on Metropolis in the night, which is an interesting idea, because he feels responsible for all this, you know. Martha's like, you push yourself too hard. You're not Superman, you know. Aunt May, Spider-Man. Yeah, he feels responsible, and he looks, you know, he looks really, really worn out. But he's like, hey, got to keep going. Batman has no limits, Dan, so...
Well, I think he sleeps most of the day. So, you know, Superman, I get it. If he's doing chores on the farm all day, and then he goes and he's doing this stuff all night, I could see him wearing himself out, you know? His solar batteries only have so much juice in him.
That's true. That's true. And hey, as we know, he's not going to college or anything, so he's got plenty of time to do this stuff, right? So, but yeah, but we established that he's sick, and this is really the first time we've ever seen him this way outside of Kryptonite. He goes to the barn to do some construction there, because as we saw, Lex and Clark had a big fight in the barn. There was an earthquake, so there are lots of repairs to be done there. What do we hear, Dan? We hear funny music, which means something funny is about to happen, right? Because he just, you know, it looks like he's just doing. He put nails. I love the practical effects of him just like shoving a nail in wood. Obviously, they've done some kind of trick practical effect there, but that's cool. That little subtle things.
Yeah.
Superman using his powers for chores. I love that. But you're
yep. Yep. Oboe playing or whatever it is. Yep.
Exactly. We know something ridiculous is going to happen, right? And what happens? But Clark sneezes and blows the barn door off of the barn, up and away into the sky.
Yeah,
which is a pretty good effect, I thought, of seeing the barn door fly off.
It's funny because I watch it and I'm like, the shot of the actual barn doors flying away was there's a car in the foreground and the smoke effect, and it was so dated and CGI-y, but it's so charming now. Like, it has its own sort of like cutesy early 2000s charm. I'm like, that's fun. I like that.
I know what you mean. It didn't like take me out of it. Like there's some effects that take me out of it. When I'm like, that's clearly a CGI chainsaw. There was no need for that. but this one, it worked for me, right? Who finds this door but one Lois Lane, Dan?
That's right. Of course. I mean, they say later in the episode, they say that it was blown for miles. So the odds that it was going to fall next to Lois Lane are pretty slim, but we'll give the episode, I think we'll give a pass, because it's awesome and Lois Lane is there. So it gets her onto the trail of Clark's sickness. So
there it is. Yes, it starts her career in journalism.
Yep.
I have some thoughts on that. I'll save to the end, but I have a feeling we might disagree, but that's what's fun. So anyway, Possibly, yep. So Lois sees this coming out of the sky. She's like, what the hell? And then we go to the opening credits and we come back and hey, we have our Smallville overpass, which is very famous. Everybody knows his overpass. Clark caught that. Another effect that doesn't always sit well with me, Clark catching that car in season four, clearly a CGI car that happened to this overpass. He meets the Legion of Superheroes here. We see it all the time. But Lex and Lana are driving. talking about how Clark doesn't go to school. No one's going to school now because Lana tells Lex that, quote, school should be open by next semester. Yeah, sure it will. Forget school, everyone. There's no more school anymore for these characters, which is honestly, that's a shame. I know they were like, well, we didn't want to constrain them because they had 4 years of high school and we don't want to have 4 years of college. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of potential there. You have different characters, different storylines. You kind of have to play with the whole responsibility of, like, because, you know, like I said, Clark, he's not doing anything now, so he doesn't have to get out of anything to go save anyone. That's part of the fun of Clark Kent, I think. So.
Yeah, and they didn't, I mean, honestly, it's not like being in high school held them back. They left the school whenever it was necessary, so it was right. Fine.
Exactly. But that establishes, because we know Clark dropped out, but this establishes why everybody else doesn't go to school. And Chloe has an internship at the Daily Planet. So at least she's like, okay, you are on your career path. That is good. Good for you. You are putting in your time, putting in your work. But then we also find out that Lex has offered Lana a room at the mansion. So we know where this is going, right?
Oh, boy.
So nice of him. What a great guy.
Just out of the kindness of his own heart, I think. There's probably no ulterior motives at all.
No, none at all. Which you know, and I love they actually kind of talk about that in the episode with some cameras, but we'll get into that. I think Lex was right here, although I did have an LOL moment at the end when he tries to justify why the cameras are there. But anyway, we'll get there. But he realizes in his rearview mirror they're being tailed, right? We see classic black SUVs. So that establishes what's going on with Lex's plot in this episode. But go back to the Kent farm, and Clark is having his temperature check by Martha. He has no fever. She says he's never been sick before, never seen him. Okay, I always remember this, Dan, as like, oh, he got sick because he is working around the clock to repair the world from the damage. And I like that. I like how Superman does that, right? Because Superman, despite what you might think from Man of Steel, Superman does care about property damage, right? So he is out there. Henry Cavill better have gotten sick too and gotten super breath after the destruction that happened to Man of Steel. That's all I gotta say. So, but I thought that was why he got it. But then, and a line I totally forgot, Martha's like, well, you know, you were in the Phantom Zone. You didn't have your powers. Maybe you picked up a germ there. And I'm like, so which is it, Joe? Which one is it?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because we don't really know. So I guess they're just throwing some theories out there. We don't ever learn the truth. So it's possible either or happened. I guess it's first presented to us that it was because he was tired and working too hard. But I suspect it's probably the latter because I just don't think Superman would get a cold from working too hard. But.
Right. That's a good point. So they inform each other, you know, because when you work too hard, your immune system's down, you're more susceptible to things. So good for the ambiguity, Smallville. So we can headcanon that away, and that's what's fun to discuss. But Lois comes in, right? So she apparently, good on Lois, is getting in a workout today because as we found out, it was miles away.
Yeah.
She was jogging. And she comes in, and I had to stop and think to myself, wait, where does she live now? Does she live here again? Does she live? So, like, she just comes in, you stuck stuff out of the fridge. I know they're friends and all, but no, she's living at the Talon now. She does not still live at the Kent farm. But here it is, right? That her subplot gets kicked off because she tells them that this barn door fell out of nowhere, and then she notices that their barn door is gone. So it's kind of funny. Although it is like the classic, hey, does Clarky have the sniffles? Because she sees Clark is sick. So this is where they are in their relationship right now with Lois and Clark. So what do you think about this, Dan?
Well, you know, I'm all in for it. I love the teasing. I love their relationship. And I like how slow of a burn it is, obviously, you know, meeting her a couple seasons back now. But this is exactly why I fell in love with her as Lois Lane, is because it's always fun, their interactions, and that, for a show that can get a little heavy sometimes, that levity is very welcome for me. So I thought it was great. Although I wish they didn't have her see that their barn door was missing. So she couldn't connect them. Cause I don't know how you'd get around that. If she realizes that the barn door was miles away, somebody at the farm must know or be responsible. So I wish they left that part out of it, but
I think that's a great point. I think obviously having something fantastical happen to her works, right? Gives her something to do. She is, you know, sometimes I enjoy it, sometimes I don't so much. She is comic relief element for a long time on the show. That's what she's doing here. But yeah, to have her be like, oh, it's the kids bar. Like, come on. Like, that connects too many dots.
Yeah.
But hey, it's only, you know, it's not 15 years till she finds out the secret. It's like 3 years. So, you know, I guess that's okay. But in the companion, Erica Durant says this to say, quote, I thought it was really funny. Of all the people for the barn door to almost hit, it would be Lois. That was a really funny moment. And I think it starts to show how she has this really inquisitive mind, which is great for what she ends up doing as a career when she gets older. These are just little clues that give her the impetus to start investigating and poking her nose into stuff. So, there you go.
I love Clark's response, too. Maybe it was a plane that flew overhead that's just... It's just like a half-destroyed barn door. It's just hanging out the back of the plane. I don't understand. Like,
yeah, it was one of those cargo planes with the door open.
Okay, cool. Good try, Clark. That was pathetic, man. You could do better than that, I think.
But I love the really lame superhero explanations, yeah. You know? These are the kind of classic Clark Kent excuses. I need to return some library books, excuse me.
That kind of thing, right?
So go back to the mansion. And, again, speaking of the Arrowverse, Lex Luthor's kind of chewing out his diggle here, if we're going to use an Arrow connection, because he has this private investigator guy who I'm watching Arrow again right now. I'm like, oh, it's Diggle. It's not really Diggle, right? But it's that same kind of guy. It's like his bodyguard or something. We find out he's a private investigator, and he tells him, like, hey, do your job. What are you still doing here? And the guy tells him, oh, it's a warehouse on this street and that street. He's like, okay, well, go there. So that's where he goes.
He's trying to track this SUV that's been following Lex, and he says, we've tracked it to this warehouse. I'm like, how do you track a car to it? Like, unless you follow the car. But it seems like they looked in their computers or their records or something, and they found the truck was at a warehouse. I just didn't understand that, but it must have been just a slip of what he said. I was just confused by it. But
you know, there's so much about that kind of stuff on this show. It's just, to me, I just don't even think about it anymore. There is... Near the end, where, like, everybody finds out where it is, but no one... It is kind of confusing later when everybody gets there and people are telling them where it is, but certain people show up and some people don't. So there's a lot of confusion about who finds this warehouse, how that kind of thing, for sure. Yep. So I agree. But then Lex is like, hey, then what are you still doing here? Which is a good point. Like, hey, we found that guy you're looking for. I mean, he's over there, I guess, still. I don't know. Well, then go do it. I'm 100% on Lex's side here. The hell am I paying you for?
Yeah.
So he sends him on his way. And Lana comes in. Now that Lana is with Lex, she has to wear all black all the time. There is a new color scheme for Lana. If you don't understand, that means she's on the dark side now.
Yeah.
Visual storytelling, Dan.
I get it.
So, but she looks like season four Lana. Like season four when she was all edgy when she came back from Paris, like wearing all black and stuff like that. Yeah. But this is them trying to adult her up, I guess, from her like her pinks and anyway. But I noticed that. It's a clear wardrobe shift for the character. But she comes in, and Lex tells her that he's being followed, right? And, they talk about it. They sit down by the fireplace, as they always do. That's like their... Like, the loft for Clark and Lana is them, and then the fireplace for Lex and Lana is them. They're always talking about that fireplace. And he's like, I don't know who I can trust. And Lana's like, you can trust me. It's like, okay.
Yep.
We know. We know. He gives... Lana, this business card. So I'm going to call Chekhov's business card, which I thought was going to pay off some. It pays off for Lana, but it doesn't pay off for Lana calling Chloe at the end. That's kind of what I was talking about. But she has, there's an insert shot. I got to take a screenshot of this because it's so obvious. She's like, hey, if anything happens to me, call this guy. Here's his number. I'm like, okay, this is clearly going to come into play later. And we have a plus one from Metropolis because this guy is the best PI in Metropolis. So
not for long.
But, not for long. Yeah. He was the best PI in Metropolis. So anyway, we go to the Daily Planet, and nice little newspaper article of Lex donates to rebuild the city, right? Chloe's kind of disgusted at this headline. We'll take a shot of that. It's just, of course, that's classic, right? Hero, any story, right? Hero does something good in secret. Villain does something, on the surface level, it's good, but gets all the credit, right? So it's very subtle this episode, but I like how they throw that in there.
She calls it guilt money, which makes sense. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he is the reason why things are the way they are. Him and Brainiac and Zod to a degree. But so Clark comes in here, and this is a pretty funny scene. This is why I always highlight Tom Welling. He's great at playing a villain, and he's great at comedy, right? Because he comes in and tells Chloe, he's like, hey, guess what? I sneezed. And she's like, and? And he's like, he's so proud of himself. Or something. I love this little comedic exchange here. She's like, oh, people sneeze every day. And then he has to, you know, like, doesn't have to show it. It just kind of comes out and he sneezes and all the papers go everywhere. And you think to yourself, well, he blew a barn door off last time. Why not this time? But again, the show, one step ahead.
Yeah.
He's like, I was lucky I was able to cover my mouth this time.
He said half. He said I was able to half cover my mouth. So, okay. Yeah. So that's half of his full strength, I guess, is what's implied there. But
full strength is destruction of property. Half strength is blowing some papers. Yep. Got it. Yep. So no more dangerous than his super speeding, basically, yep. With all the papers flying around. He tells Chloe what's up. He tells her that Lois found the barn door. And Chloe's like, all right, I'll deal with Lois. You deal with your cold. And I love this moment here. If you search Smallville, like a GIF on Facebook or Twitter, you'll find this where he's like, acts like he's going to sneeze. And he's like, ah, just kidding. And he leaves. I love that. I love this. Like you said, this show can get dark. You know, the show can get depressing. The show can get like angsty. But when he injects some humor, it's fun. And that's what he does here. You know, I think for the most part, they have a lot of fun with the new Power episodes, don't they?
I think so. Yeah, I think maybe that's why they're a highlight for me, because it's usually like him trying to like learn. This one's a little bit less so, where he was like testing it and trying it out over and over, but he's still getting his mind around it and that sort of thing. And they do, like you said, I love that moment as well, because it's just, that's a moment of levity that's informed by the characters, and Clark is just having some fun with his friend, and that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. Be friends. That's awesome.
For sure. Now, Lex, who would be following Lex, right? As he mentioned a lot earlier, I look to the lowest branch on the family tree. So he goes to talk to Lionel here, because that's what I would assume too, if I were Lex. Lionel is hard at work in his office, and Lex confronts him about being followed, and Lionel's like, son, if I was going to have you followed, you wouldn't know about it.
So, classic Lionel. That's a classic. Lionel.
But Lex does say that he suffered a total memory loss, which is, I, of course, think to the series finale when he says that. You know, he lost his memory for 24 hours. Because Lionel's pretty disgusted with them. He's like, the atrocities you committed. Like, he's being kind of... Lionel knows more than anyone, because he's in the inner circle now. He knows what happened.
Yeah.
So I think he's been pretty hard on Lex here, you know?
I mean, say that that's a theme of their relationship.
that's in character, I guess. But he wants to help Lex, and Lex is like, I don't need your help. I've had your help before, which, you know, references earlier episodes, you know, where he was in the mental institution and the, you know, so references it without referencing it. So good, subtle references to continuity there, show. But he storms out, you know, it goes about as well as every Lionel Lex conversation. And Lex goes in the elevator, lights go off, elevator stops, gas comes out, and he gets kidnapped. So wasn't Lionel, or was it? No, it wasn't. I mean, I guess they want you to believe it might have been him. Because you don't know. Because Lionel does that. This is a very Lionel move. I totally get why Lex would think this. But obviously I knew. Oh, Green Arrow did this. Spoilers. But I think the episode, had they not heavily promoted Green Arrow the way they did, you know, in season 6, I would have maybe thought Lionel was playing a game with them. You know, because that's usually how this stuff goes.
Well, it happens in his elevator. I mean, it happens immediately after he talks to Lionel. So, it would seem to think that he would at least be aware that it was happening if he was not directly responsible for it. But
right, you think he would? Lex walks out, Lionel pushes the button. He knows. Take him in.
Yeah.
Or something. That's what you would think. But this is, quote-unquote, good Lionel now? So I guess he wouldn't do that? All right, this is where we are. If this was season 3, it would have been Lionel.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. We couldn't afford Oliver Queen in season 3, though, so.
No.
That's why.
No, he was off limits. Yeah. We could have Adam Knight, but no Oliver Queen.
Yeah, exactly.
that budget Batman, not this budget Batman.
Right.
But Martha comes home to take care of Clark. This is a very cute mom moment. You know, she's like, oh, we just got to get through this together. She's got groceries. She's got, like, a towel on him, right? I think this is really cute, and I love it when Clark has to be parented some, you know?
And I loved that she had DVDs from Smallville's version of Blockbuster. That was funny. You know?
I looked. I was like, is that Blockbuster? I guarantee it was like the color scheme or something.
Yep.
But that was funny. I saw some meme the other day, and it was like, and this meme goes to a lot of things that people put text on. But it's like, you know, it's a middle-aged woman, assumingly her mom, like an older woman with like a walker. And she's like, I remember when Netflix used to come in the mail. It's like, let's get you to bed, Grandma. Yeah, yeah. that's what I thought.
Oh, man. So, that was fun. And, it was, yeah, like you said, it was cute. I love Martha. Obviously, she's great. But, like, seeing that sort of side of her, like, trying to nurture a sick Clark is something, obviously, we don't really get to see. So, that's fun.
Yeah, because it's always like, Clark's sick, he's about to die.
Right.
Right? It's like, he's got a kryptonite bullet in him, he's been stabbed by a kryptonite knife, right? It's all these horrible, like, there's no, like, oh, let me get you some orange juice, honey. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, he's gonna die. So, you know, tone it back some, get to see that motherly nature. But then Lionel shows up, right? Lionel shows up right after she mentions, your father's gone now, so we gotta figure this out ourselves. And Lionel, classic person showing up at like the most awkward time, right? That your new dad is here, Clark. It's Lionel.
Don't call him that. Don't call him that.
But Lionel, you know, I noticed near the end of season 5, right, he's getting a little more casual, right? And now he's got like, he would always show up in his 3-piece suit and his trench coat. Now he's got like a nice like polo shirt on and his trench coat. So I'm liking the casual Lionel look here. But he tells them that Lex was kidnapped. And Clark's like, so? Lex and I don't have anything to do with each other anymore. So
it's a little cold, but I understand why he feels that way.
Right. And Lionel here, like, good on... This is like Lionel being, like, good manipulating Lionel. He's like, well, but you and Zod do. If they recover Lex's memories, he may or may not remember. There is some ambiguity. They all question if Lex remembers everything. And frankly, I would too, because there's no reason... I criticized this in the last episode. As much as I loved the season premiere, it's classic Smallville. Like, memory loss and amnesia. It comes around on the finale, right? Series finale. I understand when Lex was possessed by Zod, why he would have a memory loss when Zod left. I get that. But then, it wasn't just that. It's like, Lex has a memory loss for the entire time he had powers, which makes no sense. Because even in this episode, Lex is like, When Zod left, or right, when the alien left, I lost the powers too. Yeah, but that makes sense. But again, you had powers before Zod possessed you, so you should. You know what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
There's a lack of internal story logic, which I've come to accept being a fan of Smallville.
Well, I was curious too, because I kind of forgot if he does remember and he's just repeating this ad nauseum to convince people that he didn't. And I couldn't remember if it paid off down the line or not, but I assumed it didn't. So I just was like, right, whatever, you know.
That would have been, if this was later on in the show, this was like, well, they thought it was later on in the show back then, but if this was like season 9 or 10, they might have could have gotten away with that, where him acting like he didn't remember, but he did remember everything. That would have been a cool twist. But there's too much status quo to keep going on, Dan, for them to make those changes, unfortunately.
I understand.
But that is what Lionel's angle is. He's like, hey, Clark, maybe he's just saying he forgot. Maybe he knows. He knows your secret. He knows everything about you and Krypton. And then if somebody kidnaps him and tortures him, he's going to expose your secret. So you better go get him. So I think that was a good play by Lionel. Like, I know he was earnest in it, but even if he wasn't, like, that's a good manipulating tactic to get Clark to go save his son. So
yeah, it's Lionel being Lionel, you know. To his core, he's just a manipulative person. So
character consistency, yeah. Which is... you know, hit or miss on this show, but here it is. So, now, speaking of Lex, he wakes up and he's chained up and wired up in some warehouse. And I swear this guy looks like Gary Busey, this guy that is kidnapper.
He reminds me of someone. I can see Gary Busey now that you say it, but there's someone else he reminds me of, and I can't think of who it is.
Well, I looked at him, I was like, is this his son? Is it Jake Busey? But I look, it's not him. It's neither Busey.
I don't know. There's something, like, maybe about his hair or something. You just can't take him seriously, I think. At least I couldn't. Yeah. But
he looks like a henchman in like an 80s action movie.
Yeah, right? Yeah, like Die Hard or something like that. Yeah.
This, which is why I had the Buseys. I'm like, yeah, one of them has to be one of those guys, right? But and he's got an attitude, you know, he's a classic taking it too far, that kind of thing. But we get some exposition here. They have the only working satellite on Dark Thursday. I love Dark Thursday. I love that that's a thing. Like, I love that has a name to it. Like the day the Earth stood still, so to speak. Look at that.
Hey.
Look at that, pulling out that sci-fi title. But they saw how Lex went to the Pentagon and, you know, stole what he needed and, you know, set up the satellites, that kind of thing. But this is very important information that they have the only working satellite. So that'll come into play in a bit. So we cut to Chloe and Lois. Very creative shot here, by the way. They're on the side of the road, and it's like sunset, and
oh,
there's
yeah.
like fog or smoke or something. I'm like, this is a very artistic shot for Smallville on location. I thought it was pretty cool, one you don't see all the time. It took them a while to set that up and get the silhouettes of them walking in. And it's very cinematic, Dan. So
I could see it, yeah.
But they go over to the barn door, and Chloe is trying to humorously technobabble her way out of, like, well, there's a micro twister in the, you know, just all this BS to get Lois off the scent. And I don't know if you picked up on this. It sounded like to me, speaking of people being sick in this episode, it sounded like Erica Durance was sick in this scene. Like, she sounded kind of nasally or like, I'm like, oh, did she have a cold that day herself? She's the real one with the cold.
Maybe it was maybe they filmed it in October or November up there in Toronto, and it's not as pleasant as it may look in Kansas.
That is true. I mean, that's why everybody wears a jacket on this show, even when it's like April.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think it's that cold in April in Kansas. Yeah. But anyway, it's funny. But again, you made a great point. I criticized this some, but I would have accepted it a lot more had she not known this was the Kent's barn door.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one piece that, cause you would think like, it's probably pretty, I mean, I know that she's been through a lot and everybody on the show has, but it would be a pretty traumatic experience if you were just out jogging and like a thing almost fell on you. You might be inclined to figure out why you almost died. And yeah, I could buy that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But she's been through a lot already.
Yeah. Yes. For sure.
You think she would have started writing something before? I got possessed by a witch. I was in an airplane crash. I was, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this is more random than those elements, though. There doesn't seem to be any sort of agency behind it. So
yes, that is true. Get back to Lex, and these guys are pushing him for information. They want to know how he had superpowers. They want to know if he can turn them back on or what's going on there, right? And the Gary Busey guy starts threatening Lex. He pulls out a gun, and the other dude's like, hey, we were specifically told not to use violence, but this guy's gone rogue, right? It's classic, right? It's classic. Hire some mercenaries, hire a team. One of them gets the big head, takes it into his own hands, right? Because he's got an attitude here. So he pulls out this gun, and he shoots Lex in the shoulder. Like,
just a flesh wound.
Yeah, just a flesh wound, Lex.
It's fine.
Come back to Lois of the Daily Planet. Chloe has failed at trying to get Lois off this story. And here's the deal, right? And let's talk about this, right? This is why I kind of have an issue with it, because the show seems to... And maybe I'm looking at it wrong. You're the Lois Lane fan like of right now on the show. Help me understand this and help me know if I'm misinterpreting it. I feel like the show is acting like Lois being a journalist is a joke as well. And so I don't like that. Chloe's like, you're a journalist now? Okay. And I'm like... I'm like, come on, like, I feel like Lois Lane's journey into journalism, how they, you know, like, should be a little treated with a little more seriousness than, like, whatever, Lois, right? Like, I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I don't even really disagree with you. I just think that it's the character that we've seen so far has been pretty flaky, maybe, like, wishy-washy on what she wants to do. And so, and it also feels pretty superfluous to the story. So it's like, it's... You're right. There's no gravitas to the decision. It doesn't feel like it's a major life-changing decision. But in a way, I kind of like that because it is just something that happens, and this is the seed, and you know it's going to take a while before she becomes good at it. She can't even spell at this point, which is silly, but whatever.
That is a classic Lois thing. They decided, like, I don't know if it started in Superman the movie or if it started before that, but it's like, hey... How many F's in catastrophe or something, right? It's like, Lois Lane can't spell. Like, maybe in the world of typewriters,
yeah,
I'll allow it. But we have word processors now. Like, look, Clark Kent, other than when it's a fun in-joke, he's not going to change it in a phone booth, all right? All right? So Lois Lane should not be making spelling errors when she's typing on Microsoft Word.
You could even do it on your phone at this point, you know, and still have check your spelling,
Yeah. No, I see what you mean, though. You're right. Because the way they presented Lois till now, it would feel out of character for her just to be like, you know what? I'm going to be a serious journalist. And everyone's like, you know what, Lois? You're right. You should be. I don't know. It's complicated. But I see what you're saying. And I feel better about it now. Thank you, Dan. Yeah. I have a feeling you would help me feel better.
I think there's also an element of jealousy with Chloe. between them, you know, familial jealousy, and she sees that she's doing what she loves and she's really good at it, and I think she wants to also be good at that thing, so.
You're going to take Clark, you're going to take my job, you're going to take everything.
Well, she was the proto Lois, so it might kind of make sense.
But see, that's the pickle. The show is it, right? Because if there was no Chloe and Lois Lane showed up, it's like, I have always had a dream of working at the Daily Planet, right? You're like, oh, cool, that's the Lois Lane we know. But we have Chloe has done that for 5 years. So if you had her cousin show up, be like, I've always had a dream of working at the Daily Planet. You'd be like, well, that's you, why are there two of you?
Yeah, I understand.
And they struggle with that. And that's what the next 2 years is. Like, okay, let's get Chloe out of this. Let's put her in charge of ISIS. God's sake. That did not age well.
Nope.
And then we'll get Lois in the Daily Planet. So, although it would have been cool to see both of them work in the Daily Planet together, maybe. But they would have devolved into some kind of jealousy, like you're saying.
Of course, this would restructure the whole show. But, I mean, maybe if they have to, like, kill Chloe off, and that's what would have inspired Lois to do what she does. I could see something like that. Obviously, I don't want them to kill Chloe off. Chloe's great, but you could do that. Tracked as well, so
it would have been cliche, but it would have made sense, and everybody kind of thought, like, talk about the season four,
right? Exactly. Crusade.
Like, it was like, oh, that's what they did, right? They killed Chloe and here comes Lois, and that would have worked, but they can't. That's the thing, they always like want to have their cake and eat it too, like Lex and Clark are gonna super fight, but Lex is gonna forget everything. It's like, we're gonna kill Chloe, bring in Lois. Oh wait, Chloe's still back. It's like, but the struggles of episodic network TV, Dan, the struggle is real. So anyway, Clark goes to the Luther mansion, right? Because Lionel's like, hey, you gotta go save Lex because he might give away your secret. And Lana's just very dejectedly, sadly playing the piano. It's kind of depressing to see her like that.
She's moping, yeah.
And Clark's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, I live here now. And it's really awkward, I think, for all involved. But now she starts asking the questions that she should have asked in the last episode. Like, I know that it was the end of the world and things were at stake and there was no time to be like, all right, so what's going on here? But I like how they didn't just forget about it. She's like, hey, you knew that Lex was going to become, you know, this monster before anyone else. How did you know that? And so she's kind of pushing him for answers. Although Clark, good on him. We talked about his lame excuses earlier about the barn door. Here he's like, if I had all the answers, I wouldn't be here, Lana. I was like, good for you, Clark. That's a good comeback, right? So,
I also think the conversation is contrasted really well with the Lana-Lex conversation from earlier. Because, you know, whatever Lex's motivations are, he's super upfront with her right away about everything. Like, just tells her the truth. Like, hey, there's a dude following me and there's all this stuff. And later on, the same thing, like, with the cameras that we'll get to. But right here, like, Clark is nothing but excuses and lies. And you can understand, like, the show is at least pointing to, like, why Lana is where she is right now. Because it's like, okay, it's just like a stone wall at this point. So
it's real easy, and I've done it myself, to kind of criticize Lana for her, like, tell me everything about you, Clark, right? But listen, if you were her and you had to put up with this guy for 5 years, right? Someone that, like... like, he claimed to love you, and you were in a relationship, and then he, like, jerked you around with all these secrets all the time, and always, like you said, lies and excuses. You would be done with him, too.
Yeah.
You know? I think, like, in real life, they would never talk to each other again. There are several points over this show that we've already seen where they would never talk to each other again. So, you're right. That's a good point. It kind of shows why that she's, you know, with Lex at this point. Because even when he is sneaky... right, he's smart about giving her enough logical explanations, where she's like, "Oh, okay." So, poor Clark, though, you know, just oh boy. But he leaves because she kind of like open. Usually, right when Lex and Clark have a confrontation, like Clark just kind of storms out or the scene just ends. But here it continues to Lana like opens the door and like tells him to leave, which is you know, interesting to see. So he goes down the hall and he waits for a second. Right? He waits for a second. I don't know why, but he waits for a second. And Lana pulls out her Chekhov's business card from earlier and calls Lex's PI. We get the super hearing that I mentioned, the super hearing that we don't see. I laugh to think if there was like a security guard around there.
Well, we see that there's cameras all over the place, so Lex is going to review this footage and see him like being a creeper just right there. But
Dan, those cameras are only reviewed in the case of an emergency.
Of course, so. Of course. Fortunately, we're always under an emergency status. So
when has there not been an emergency at the Luther Mansion, right? Yeah, because Lana said this place is a fortress to Lex, and I assume there's security guards everywhere. Some guy be like, sir, it's time for you to go, but. Clark uses his super hearing to hear the conversation, so he hears the guy's name and phone number. So he takes that information. This is when we get into the whole, like, who's getting what information where to get to the warehouse? I think this is all very convoluted, yeah. And it could have been a little streamlined. But anyway, Clark has his information now, so he's going to go take it to Chloe, as you do. So then we get to what we were referencing a little bit through the episode. Lana starts digging through all Lex's stuff to try to get some kind of lead, because obviously... The PI didn't answer. We find out why in a little bit. But he didn't answer. He's dead end. So I was digging through his desk and all that. And she finds this, like, remote control thing. I'm like, oh, this is going to open to that secret room.
That's what I thought, too. Yeah, I'm like, oh, she knows. I'm like, she knows about that secret room because she was in it. So I'm like, why is she trying to go in there? I don't understand.
Yeah, like you. I was like, oh, the secret room. Okay. This must be where those... Because I remember the cameras thing a little bit. I'm like, oh, she must go in there and he's put cameras in there. I don't know what his secret room is anymore. He's had a safe in there. He's had a safe room. So yeah. I don't know what that's the one we talked about actually. We were in lockdown. So.
And I'm like, oh, so, she's just gonna go in there, and that's gonna be something in there. And nope.
Yeah,
nope,
that's there'll be a clue. But no, the other there were many buttons on there. Very intuitive control, as we find out. Lana, we're going through all the footage, but this control room, broadcast TV control room. Display drops down. It's all these screens of the Luther Mansion, right? And of course, if this was a movie and not a TV show, they would have built another set for this. Which again, I think Dan she should have gone into the safe room and seen the screen. Because why would he sit there in his library and look at all this stuff? But the screens drop down and we see that there are cameras in every room, as there should be. Like, there's so, as we were joking about just now, there's so many things that happen. Lex would have found out Clark's secret back in season one if he had cameras in this house.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like such an obvious thing to do. He's rich. It's not like he can't afford it. You know? So he should totally have cameras everywhere. I totally buy it. Bruce Wayne has them all at Wayne Manor. Lex Luthor should have them at his mansion as well. And of course, there is a camera in her bedroom. And she's changing, and it's very tasteful CW broadcast TV. She's like, her back is to the camera. She's wearing her jeans the whole time. Lucky for her, she just decided to change shirts, and that was all. Yeah. But what did you think of this whole thing?
You know, I mean, like you're saying, I think they do what they can with television, but you know, it's not like you look at it and you're like, okay. It's not that bad. Like you said, your back was to the camera. I get
easy
it.
Easy for you to say, Dan. Have you been filmed secretly in your room before?
Maybe. I wouldn't know. Would I?
We don't know. That's the thing. We don't know.
I mean, I of course, I get why she's upset. Like, that's an invasion of privacy for sure. But it's like, the shock of horror. I guess, you know, it's never happened to me, so I can't say. But yeah, it's, I just thought that the whole cameras, dedicated security footage, screens coming down was a bit much. I'm like, couldn't Lex just look at all this on his computer or somewhere? It doesn't like have to have this thing that comes down. But anyways, yeah.
Right. It's a little contrived, but it does. It's not just for like the Lana Lex drama, because it comes back around. And this is why I'm like, oh, okay. I accept it more now, because she uses it to kind of rewind and look at what's going on in all the rooms. And she sees the conversation that Lex had with the PI earlier, where he's like, we've traced it to a warehouse at X and Y. And he's like, well, go there. And that's how she knows where to find Lex. So, good on her.
Which she never does. Oh, no, she does. Sorry.
She does, yep. But it gets confusing later. I'm like, why is she telling people there who never show up? then we go back to... Lex. He's still being tortured by these dudes. They know that Luther Corp has done genetic research. Right, so I'm like, okay, all right, we got some inside intel. There's a reason these guys, they think Lex has found a way to, you know, superpower himself, right? And I'm like, wow, what's Lex going to do? He decides, look, I'm going to tell you the truth, right? an alien from another dimension inhabited my body, and then when he left, the powers left, which is sounds ridiculous. And of course, they're not going to believe that.
Right.
Right. Got to use Occam's razor. What's the more realistic thing, that or then the fact they have some superpowered serum?
Right.
And again, that just drew attention to the fact that, like, the powers left, the memories left, but he had the powers before Zod showed up, so he should have remembered everything until Zod possessed him, but then he would have known everything about Clark. Blah, 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 blah. We've been over it. Let's move on.
Status quo
is reestablished. So he tells him that there's a serum on the 33rd floor of Luther Corp. Well, level 33.1. Look at that. And then the password is Julian. I'm like, oh, my. Look at this. Look at you, Smallville. Like, so again, the subtle continuity here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, to the viewer, it gives a very plausible, like, oh, wait a minute, is there something going on here, you know? And it obviously works, so yeah, that's very good.
Well, and I thought, I don't know if he was lying about this or not, right? Because at the end of Season 5, Brainiac invents some serum and injects him with it, and that's how he gets the power. So I'm like, oh, maybe Lex kept more of this stuff or something, and that's what this is. But then I assume it all gets burned up here at the end, so you don't really know. But I think it's cool the fact that, like, I thought he was going to sit, he sends the Gary Busey tells the other guy to go get this stuff, right? And I thought he was going to find nothing, or it was a lie, but no, he comes back with something, so.
Yeah, and I was difficult to follow this thread. So the guy just goes and gets it? Like, I would think that there would be security there.
Look, all you need is the password.
Yeah, maybe that's set up that way, but that's terrible.
Mr. Luther sent me. Isn't he kidnapped right now?
Yeah. And so he brings the serum back, and somebody gets injected with it, the dude. But what does it do? Does it do anything? What is it?
I think, you know, Lex does mention later that it was specifically made for him.
Oh, so you think that's true. Okay.
And I think that's what makes me think all this was true.
Interesting.
Because Brainiac did make this one thing just for him. So I think... Actually, it's an even deeper level of subtle continuity than I had realized. But you're absolutely right. There's no way some random dude could just show up at Luther Corp and, you know.
Lex told me to pick up the stuff, man.
I'm here for the secret serum, Julian. So now we get a scene between Lionel and Oliver Queen. Now, Dan, would it surprise you if I told you this was a reshoot not initially intended for this episode, this scene?
Interesting. Okay, did they have a different actor or something?
No, that's a very good guess, actually. But yeah, Stephen Amell was originally cast. As,
wow, that's amazing.
But, I know, right? It was like the Henry Cavill, like, we cast you and we didn't cast you, and now we cast you again. But no, in the companion, Todd Slavkin has this to say, quote, "Originally, you only saw Oliver in the coda, and we felt like he should have a bigger introduction, and we should get to know Oliver Queen's persona before we find out he was behind Lex's kidnapping. Once we had a rough cut of the show, we saw an opportunity and wrote that scene." So, I think it works here. Like, it doesn't stick out to me as, like, this wasn't supposed to be here before.
Yeah.
But if you think about the end coda with Oliver Queen, I'm like, oh, that was totally supposed to be his introduction. Because you see a green arrow,
yeah,
and he's all cool and mysterious on a roof. And what they did here, though, there is a deleted scene. At the end of the episode, where Lionel comes to talk to Martha and Clark, and then kind of wrap everything up, like, "Oh, your father would be proud of you, and oh, thanks for saving Lex, and I didn't do it for him, but anyway, you did it." Like, it was actually a very good scene, I think, you know, between Martha, Clark, and Lionel, and actually they're about to have dinner, and they invite Lionel to stay, and he does, so it kind of like establishes, like, "Oh, are you my new dad?" So I like the scene. But clearly they took that out to put this scene in.
Gotcha.
With Oliver and Lionel. If everyone recalls Season 7, you know, Lionel had Oliver's parents killed for Veritas.
Oh, so when, man, I forgot that was part of the show.
Season 7. So when he goes over, because Lionel shows up and Oliver's not there yet, and he picks up this picture of, like, presumably, you know, the Queens, the parents, and then Oliver Queen, I'm like, you killed them. You know, and I wonder if that was even anywhere on the radar. I seriously doubt it. this is a good scene between them. I like what Oliver tells him. He's like, all those hostile takeovers haven't aged you a bit, because John Glover really is. You know, He really is kind of. I mean, he's aged now, 20 years later, right?
Right.
But if you look at, you know, Smallville, where he does like the flashbacks and the current light, all, he looks pretty much the same, right?
They give him a wig, right? I think, but he does look exactly the same.
Yeah, and they put a little actor's tape on his face to kind of like smooth out his wrinkles and stuff, that kind of thing. But it looks like, also, hey, Shazam! You seen Shazam, Dan?
No, I haven't seen it.
Haven't seen Shazam?
No.
John Glover's in it.
Oh, is he a bad guy?
He plays the father of Dr. Savannah, so he basically plays Lionel Luther. he's only in a couple scenes, right? But one of them takes place in 1974. One of them takes place in presumably 2019. Doesn't look that different.
No.
that's what I thought of that when they have this line here. But Lionel basically accuses Oliver of kidnapping Lex, also puts some little backstory for Lex and Oliver, like they were at the boarding school together and they were rivals. So like, this is a very informative scene about the character and Lex and Oliver's rivalry. So I'm glad they added it story wise, but I don't know. There's something just a little more cool about that last, if that was the first time we saw Oliver on the rooftop there at the end.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had no idea. It just feels a part of the story.
It does establish that he's moved there. Like Lionel's like, Oliver Queen moves to Metropolis. Right. And as we're, To understand, he's just expanding his, you know, Queen Industries is the name of it here, not Queen Consolidated, as it's called. And I love how that, like, these business, like Wayne Tech, Wayne Corp, Wayne Enterprises. Yeah. It's like, okay, guys, can we just pick one and have that across all the mediums, right? It's the Daily Planet everywhere, okay? That's where Clark Kent works. There's no confusion there.
I suppose that's true.
The last bit of trivia for this scene where Lionel drops for the story, he confirms that I know that Queen Industries had the only working satellite on Dark Thursday. So that kind of undercuts the twist at the end, I guess, because at this point, you're like, oh, well, Oliver really did kidnap Lex, because up to that point, it was supposed to be ambiguous. But anyway, there you have it, if you had any doubt. The new mysterious character kidnapped our main character. Who would have guessed?
What the heck?
So Clark's back at the Daily Planet. He's worn out from running out of super speed. I mean, he hasn't lost his powers, but he's struggling. So he looks all like spent because he had to jog. And
I love that. I love how it's like there's no difference between his super duper speed and running. So no. Like he can't just super speed slowly or like run really fast. He has to just gently jog, I guess. Like that's how drained he is, I guess, is how it works. But
so he looks like all of us when we have to jog when he gets to the Daily Planet. Still wear that jacket, though. Still wearing that jacket. We have an episode title set episode. They say sneeze a few times, was the first time of it, so we got that. That was inevitable. Someone was going to say sneeze in this episode. I guess other episode titles would have been breath, perhaps. That's the best one. I wouldn't want an episode called blow. So
no, that would not seem appropriate, but
Clark tells Chloe about the PI. And I like what they end here, the scene with the commentary that Chloe says that I guess heroes can't take sick days, right? And he says, well, it's when you put the world in jeopardy every year. So referencing the fact that, you know, this is what happens in Smallville now. It's a tradition. So yeah. So we were mentioning this a little earlier about who shows up where with what information, right? Lana shows up at the warehouse because she saw the address or heard the address on the video footage. And she calls Chloe to tell her where it is, right? So I'm like, but then if Chloe just checked her voicemail, we wouldn't need any of this super press stuff, right? So I don't know why they do that. To me, that's a plot hole. So.
Yeah, it's extra work. Like they're reiterating the information that we've already gotten twice now. So I don't know why that's here either. Yeah. It confused me too.
Yeah. Cause it serves no purpose. Because we cut from that to, Chloe and Clark at the PI's, you know, apartment. They make some cracks about, I expected to have like ceiling fans and, you know, film noir private investigator stuff. Chloe tries to get into his computer. She says she's a decent hacker, but not a miracle worker. I disagree, Miss Sullivan, because you hack into all kinds of stuff on this show.
I'm like, wait a minute, what are you talking about?
She's such a good hacker, Dan. She might as well marry the Green Arrow on this show. You know, that's what I'm saying. So
She could.
Who knows? Who's to say? Who knows? but Clark uses his X-ray vision, and then sees that there's a secret room behind here where he does all his, I guess, secret business, the PI. And he tries to rip open the door, but he doesn't quite have enough strength, right? This is to your point, contrived. Like, there's no in between.
Yeah. Right? It's a bit contrived, but, I mean, it's fine.
It's fine. So, because, well, it's when they have these powers, right, the new power episodes, as we discussed, it's like there has to be, oh, I have to use this one power, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought, we get that later. We don't need that here.
Right, yeah.
You know, like, the later is when we get the, like, oh, thank God he had super breath this week, or everybody would have died, or he had to give away his secret, but we don't need it here.
But he wouldn't have thought to use his super breath later, I think, if he didn't know he could just use it. Like, Chloe's the one that, like, encourages him to, because the only reason he did it was accidentally, and he doesn't think of sneezing. It as, like, a power yet, but Chloe cleverly thinks of it here and says, hey, blow the door off, that'd be fine. Right. And it works. So now Clark has it in his repertoire. He knows to think about it later on.
Yeah, because she's like, you can do anything. He's like, except sneeze on command. but then, yeah, this is our Clark taking off in Crusade moment, so to speak, with the 360 and the air and the CGI going, you know, sucking it all in. And, in slow motion, it looks even more ridiculous, so they probably should have done that. But anyway, we get the first instance of him intentionally using super breath, blowing the steel door off, and there it is. So now he can use that, and they go in there, and they get the information they need, because password protect the laptop on your desk, but when you have a secret room, why password protect anything, right?
That's fine, yeah. It's behind the wall. Nobody knows.
Yeah, no one has super breath. No one can blow this door down. Huff and puff and blow this door down. Thanks, Chloe, for the Three Little Pigs reference. So Clark apparently has his speed back now because he doesn't want to put Chloe in danger because he's like, look, I don't know if I can protect you in my weakened state or whatever. Which, I mean, he does this all the time anyway. There's really no... I don't know why there was a need for debate. It's not like he always brings her with him when he yeah. does these things.
Yeah.
So... we find out, we come back to the warehouse, right? And we find out that there, like we're saying, there actually was a serum. Like, the other dude has it. And then Gary Busey has Lana, has a gun on them both. And this is where Lex is like, it was tailored for his blood chemistry, right? So it won't work on anyone because he's threatening to, get the Gary Busey guy is threatening to inject Lana with this serum just in case it was like a, like some kind of poison or something, right? That the Lex had got him to get by accident. Which, I don't know. Again, the show's vague about it, but I like that. We can all have our head canon, and that's what's fun about being a fan. So Lex's like, no, you gotta inject it to me for it to work, right? So Gary Busey comes over there real close, and then Lex headbutts him. And, you know, I don't know, Dan, to me, it seems in fiction, like movies and TV shows, headbutts are way more effective than they are in real life. So
yeah, I would think so, too. I don't... it's one of those times where it's like you're the dumbest... I mean, clearly this guy's just not smart. And also, I feel like just injecting needles randomly into people's bodies is probably a really terrible idea. I just feel like there's probably like a procedure you have to go through. I don't know. What do I know?
Yeah, I mean, you gotta find the right vein. Like, you can't just, let me just stab you in the neck or the back or the... it doesn't work that way. So, commotion ensues. They grapple around a bit. The gun goes around. Lex gets a hold of it. Lana gets Lex out of the handcuffs. Lex shoots Gary Busey. And then the other guy escapes. We'll get back to him at the end. But then through all this commotion, they had all this like colored liquid. It's like Barry Allen's lab in here. All this liquid. It's all this stuff. Stuff gets knocked over. Fire starts. All that. And I got to say, Michael Rosenbaum, maybe my favorite actor on the show, right? But his line reading here is horrible. He looks at Lana, he's like, this is all my fault. I'm so sorry. And he says it just like that. Did you pick up on that? Was that just me?
I didn't stick on it, but it is weird how quickly the situation changes and like fires everywhere and then he just gets into this stuff and I'm like, you probably want to get out of there and then maybe talk to her after. I know you think you're trapped, but do something instead of just...
Like, I know you couldn't reach the vent, but, like, I don't know. I'm going to try to run through the fire if I'm them. Like, other than that, this whole place is going to collapse on top of me. Like, I don't know. Like, they gave up a little too quick. I know Lex is in bad shape. I mean, he's been shot and beat up, you know, but still. But, hey, guess what? The fire gets blown out. And they're saved. Thanks to Super Breath. So, yep. And I thought to myself, and this is what I always think too, in these superpowered episodes, is there a way he could have saved them without super breath?
He could have. Not in his weakened state, I don't think. I think normally he could have just like run something and like run and opened the gate or, you know, cracked open the fence or whatever. But I guess in his weakened state, he can still use all of his lungs for some reason. He can't use all of his legs, but he can use all of his lungs. So
I was hoping he would super speed over to a lake and freeze it. And then drop it on the warehouse.
Wow.
And that would solve that.
That might have been a little overkill and might have killed them both, but that's fine.
Right. But no, I think this is a really smart one. Because you're like, how many practical uses does super breath have? This is a practical use of it. Like, because he's like creeping behind some stuff so they don't see him. Right? So he came in there, you blow out the fire. We know it's Clark, and we see him at the end. And they, you know, I don't know how they think they got saved. Lex must think he is like chosen by God or something that he keeps getting saved.
Everything was on
God complex.
Everything in the lab was on fire and suddenly it wasn't. Oh, well, let's go home. Yeah.
Like, I was waiting for someone like, well, the emergency fire suppression system must have kicked on. Like, I was waiting. That's a Lex line at the end of one of these things, but that doesn't happen. I was waiting for that. But seriously, Clark, you're not helping with Lex's I am the chosen one of humanity God complex when he just gets, he's like, well, clearly I'm invincible because some people are saving me. Like, Lex should have died 20 times over so far on this show, and this is one of the most blatant times, right? So then I'm not sure where the deleted scene would have gone with Lionel, Clark, and Martha. It probably was around here, to kind of part of the episode wrap up. But our next scene is Chloe and Clark going on a non-date because they're not dating because we can't do that as established in Zod at the end of that episode. But they're going to go on a picnic to the lake, just like two platonic friends, you know?
I do that all the time with all my friends. We just,
you know, bring a kite.
Yeah.
It's like, when you bring a kite, that is a date.
But, I mean, the kite, the whole reason the kite existed was for that shot, because it was an S-shield shape.
Yes.
And she puts it over his chest when she hands it to him, and it's like,
We lived for that stuff back in the day, Dad.
We did, then. Now we look back and it's like, that's not so subtle. That's,
How many of these are, not only is this the shield for the Metropolis PD, not only is this now established as the Superman symbol this season, right? Now we've got kite shape. I've never seen a kite. That is un-aerodynamic, kite shape that way.
I'd love to
see them try.
She doesn't, it doesn't have to be, because he can just hold it up there with his breath,
super
I guess.
Breath, right? But they also have a frisbee and a baseball glove and ball. I also saw, so I was like, they're gonna have a fun day, just two platonic friends splashing around in the lake. So anyway, so Lois shows up, and having been, you know, she had pitched that the whole reason she was at the Daily Planet earlier was to pitch this story, right, of like the Foreign Door to the Daily Planet. And Chloe's like, oh no, Lois, this is pretty stupid. What are you doing? And Lois is like, fine, I'm gonna go take it to the Daily Inquisitor, the Metropolis Inquisitor. And it turns out she did. She made the front page, right, of the Metropolis Inquisitor. And we'll take a screenshot of this, Lois Lane's first article in a mainstream newspaper.
That's right.
And, you know, there are some changes to it where, like, aliens and, you know, and Lois is like, well, you know, my editor thought it would sell better if it was more fantastical. And I love what Clark says. He's like, so much for journalistic integrity. So...
Yeah. But here's the thing. Even if that was the trashiest tabloid magazine, you know, in existence, it's still impressive for a person's first article to go to the front page. I'd say that's still an accomplishment.
Of the Inquisitor.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. But I couldn't write an article for the Inquirer and get it put on the front page unless I was, you know what I'm saying? Unless I had some sort of talent writing about
it. Dan, we should try.
We could. We could. I suppose we could. See what we read an article about Batboy. See how
Batboy returns. Oh man. Because that is what the Inquisitor is the National Enquirer. But yeah, hey, fair point. If I just came in off the street being like, hey, this barn door fell, you know, next to me, or published this article. But still, Clark and Chloe are like cutting down Lois. They're like, oh, whatever, Lois. And I'm like, so I don't know. I feel like it could have been handled. Like, this is one of the things I remember, like, when I'm like, when I say on this show, like, I don't think Lois became Lois until season 8, right? And I love Lois in season 8, 9, and 10, right? But when they finally kind of, like, let her be Lois, this is the kind of stuff I think about where it's like, she writes an article, it's kind of silly, everybody laughs at her. I'm like, I don't like that journey for Lois Lane. But to your point, that's a valid point. She was that comic character for so long. It's like they had to find a way to connect those, and this is their attempt. So I get it. I just, when I think that Lois Lane started her journalistic career because a barn door, because Clark had a cold and a barn door fell out of the sky, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. So,
well, you know, it's I get what you're saying, and I totally see it as valid, but it's just like, also mostly people don't have these crazy adventures that get them to go on their predestined journey of whatever they're meant to do. Like, she could have just decided one day, oh, I want to try this out, and then becomes one of the best reporters. You know what I mean? Like, the best reporter alive today didn't have some preordained, destined experience that led them down that path. They were probably just interested in it and said, hey, I'll try it. You know what I mean? So it's like, no, it doesn't have to be this amazing. But because this is a prequel series, we're kind of trained to think it's got to be this amazing, crazy. Because why else tell the story, you know, if it's not something interesting? So, you know, I get it. I get that criticism.
Hey, and the important thing, though, is she gets there.
She does get there.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She does get there. Like, but that's like, man, if this show ended like season 7, left Lois in the state that she was in, I would have been very upset. But, you know, because we got those last 3 years where she is Lois Lane, I'm like, all right, we were on a journey. Like, I understand that the show understands that this is a journey.
Yeah.
Like don't did you think Lois was done now? That's when I would have been mad. But we got there. Yeah. We got there. So, but they invite, you know, as you do in a courtesy, they invite Lois on their date. And Lois is like, you're going to the lake? It looks like it's going to rain. I'm out of here. And then she leaves. And then Chloe kind of looks at Clark and he's like, okay. And I love Tom Welling. He's like, oh, like trying to like breathe in as much as he can to take a big breath. We cut to the outside exterior of the farm. See a cloudy day. Hear the sound effect. Clouds blow away. It's a beautiful sunny day now.
Yep.
And then Lois is again, sees that it's sunny. It's like, what? She's going to go write another article now, Dan.
Yeah. She goes from, I don't want to go because I don't like swimming in the rain, to standing outside with her. By the way, she's still wearing like a very heavy overcoat. And just because the clouds get removed, she's like all of a sudden ready to go swimming. So it's cutesy, right? I guess.
So what, do you think she went back upstairs and was like, hey, never mind, I want to go with you on your date now?
I hope so. I think, because that's, they did it so that she would go with them. So I hope that she does change her mind.
And I keep calling it a date. Don't get mad. I'm just having a good time. I understand, y'all. Okay, just.
Well, now it's a try date if they both go. So Clark is doing pretty well for himself, I guess.
Clark and the girl who's been in love with him for years and his future wife, and they are cousins, and they're going to go hang out. That is a very healthy day out at the lake. So anyway. So, hey, serious time now. We get back to the mansion. Lana confronts Lex about those cameras. Because she pulls out the remote control and pulls it down. Dan, I laughed out loud at this explanation from Lex. Lex is like, Lana, those are just security cameras to ensure the safety of everyone on this property. Like, that's so good. That is like, that's classic. Like, I think, honestly, I don't think he was being a creep, right? He's like, Lana, you got this all wrong. I agree with him. But if he was being a creep and that was his explanation, just, that is so good. It's like such a logic. I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's interesting too. Like his reaction, I don't think he was being creepy either. And I don't like intentionally. And I think he literally, they are there for security reasons. I think, like we've mentioned before, tons of crazy stuff happens in that house, man. Like, you probably want to have evidence if anything goes weird. So, and she, at the end, and he was forthright with her. He's like, you know, I'll take the one in the bedroom down, but that's it. And that's just how it is. So
I respected Lex here. I thought, you know, Lex is just, Lana can usually get whatever she wants out of Lex, right? And she's like, the cameras go where I do. And he's like, the camera in the room will be gone within the hour, but the rest stay. This is how I live my life. And I'm like, good for you, Lex. Like, yeah. I was having a backbone there because, you know how Lex is with Lana? Yeah, I thought he'd be like, oh, I'm taking them all down today. The classic Lex thing would have been like, tell her he takes them all down and then just moves them to the secret room somewhere. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
But good old, this was actually a very mature conversation between the two of them, and I I appreciated it.
And so. I think Lana respected it, too. I think she's, when he said that, I think she was like, okay, that's fair. That's a fair compromise.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I would have added would be him saying, after so-and-so happened, I added all these cameras. Like, to establish that we didn't have these cameras the entire series. Because if you go back and you look at all the thing, all the super-powered and fantastical things that happen...
So what,
in this mansion.
So this is a fun exercise. What, if you were the writer, what do you think the worst instance in Lex's mind would have been where he would, that would prompt him to put those cameras in?
Huh. I don't know. I mean, when Lionel was living there in season 2, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That makes sense.
Wait, was that when he was pretending to be blind?
Well, he was blind.
Well, he was blind for a little bit, yeah.
And then he wasn't, and we don't know when he got his sight back. That's a whole other, when did this happen,
right?
Of the show. But I think, oh, man, yeah, I think, and I know that, you know, in the episode we talked about lockdown last season, he mentions, like, I had this panic room installed after the Kryptonians showed up and all that. That could have all been happened at the same time.
Right.
So in my headcanon, I'm like, all right, he installed these cameras when he installed the safe room. And I'm trying to think, did anything at the mansion happen in the last half of season 5 superpowered wise? I guess not. So good on you, show. My headcanon is really saving you this time.
Yeah.
But no, if I were Lex, I would have, because I'm like, I don't trust my evil dad.
Right.
He's even really blind. What's he up to? So then he would have seen Clark come in with his, you know, red kryptonite shooting bullets in his hand and all that stuff from that episode. But that's when I would have done it. So.
All right. Fair enough.
So, we get our coda scene, right? And this is, they're introducing so many characters in season 6, right? They got Jimmy Olsen. They got, you know, last episode, who's not in this one, by the way. But we got Justin Hartley as the Green Arrow. And this was originally intended to be his introduction scene. We see the less bad security dude that kidnapped Lex come to talk to him. And he comes out on this roof and we see this Green Arrow. Literally, Green Arrow hits him right next to his head. And I guess Oliver's mad at him. He's like, you were told not to use violence unless necessary. He's like, yeah, the other guy went rogue. And, you know, I called out Rosenbaum in that other scene. Dan, I think this guy's a terrible actor. I'm glad we never saw him again.
Oh, the henchman. Sorry, I thought you were talking about Justin Hartley. I'm like, we definitely see him again. We definitely do. he was pretty weak, yeah.
I'm like, you couldn't get another line reading out of this guy, even if he's just a day player. Like, and he wasn't in just the one scene. He was in the whole episode. I'm like, anyway, I don't want a dog on the guy. I'm just saying that it felt flat to me, this guy's delivery. But yeah, it's established here that Oliver's the one that had him kidnapped. And the guy tells him, there was someone else there, sir, someone with powers. And he's like, find him. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, Oliver, you don't know. Is he like Lex trying to collect people level 33.1? We find out actually he's collecting the Justice League. Because at this point, if we're to be believed, Justice happens later this season, he's kind of brought on Aquaman and Cyborg to his team at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere on this line. So that's what he's doing, right? So that's cool. Do you think, it's hard to, I guess, think this way, but do you think this would have worked fine for an introduction for him without that other scene? Or do you like that there's two scenes of him in this episode?
We get more of his, that, like you said, the backstory with Lex and stuff. The thing to me is, like, just this episode, if that was, I mean, he's definitely a villain. I mean, he is the villain of the piece. And his motivation isn't clear, other than jealousy with Lex. Like, is he trying to become superpowered? Like, does he want the serum for himself? Like,
yeah.
And obviously that all gets played out through the season and stuff when we learn more, but it's like, and so it's probably just a trick, but he comes in as a villain in this, and he's obviously not a villain, but
no. Well, to close this off, Todd Slavigan had this to say about the episode in the companion quote. We knew after the premiere of Zod that we had to do a follow-up to examine the ramification of Lex's actions. It felt like it was appropriate that someone would have witnessed it or been onto it, and would have been testing Lex to see if he actually had powers. But of course, the irony is that Lex doesn't have any powers. Furthermore, it seemed like a great time to make the person testing Lex be Oliver Queen, to make his introduction dramatic and carry weight in order to set up the whole rift between Lex Luthor and Oliver Queen for the rest of that season. And it's true, because like the first half of season 6 is like the Green Arrow show.
Yeah.
You know? It's like Lex versus Oliver. But hey, we all loved the Green Arrow on Smallville. That's why they brought him back for a series regular the last 3 years of the show. That's why Arrow became its own show. I mean, like, it all starts here. The Arrowverse today would not exist without this going on right here in Smallville. So, hot take, but I think it's accurate. So.
Yeah, and it's a cool... The coda is a cool bit when he says Borneo and then just hits the Daily Planet spinning globe. That's cool. That's a cool idea.
How is he supposed to check that, though, Dan?
That's a great question. That's a good point.
He's got the Oliver Queen satellite pointed at the Daily Planet so he can see.
Yeah, maybe.
We figured it out.
Or he just knows. He doesn't have to check. That's how good he is.
That's the point. A true marksman doesn't even have to check. Yeah. it's like the guy hits a three-pointer and just walks away, doesn't even look. Nothing but net. That's Oliver Queen for you right there.
So. I wonder who would find that and when.
Yeah, like, guys, ever since Oliver Queen moved in, we're getting all these arrows.
Just random places. Yeah.
Way to hide that secret identity, Oliver.
Thought I made myself clear. You were only to use violence if you were in danger.
Mr. Queen, I told you. Block went rogue. I tried to stop him, but he would have killed me too.
Well, we couldn't have that now, could we? I guess I'm just gonna have to start being more careful as to who I trust. Speaking of which, how's my old buddy Lex doing?
Whatever powers he had are clearly gone. But sir, there was someone else in the warehouse. Someone who seems to have other abilities.
Find him.
Sneeze got an 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave this a 1 out of 5. So, oof. Not a fan of this episode. That's harsh, yeah. I think. But Dan, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Sneeze?
You know, I think I'd give it a B. I think it's good. I think it's better than average, and the Sneeze stuff is pretty fun, and I like the Lois stuff, you know, even if it's got some issues. The Lex and Lana stuff, for the most part, that's my eyes glaze over, and I'm like, okay, whatever. but that's just me, and... But it feels heavy, and of course the introduction of Oliver Queen is significant, so it's definitely an important episode. So there's a lot going on, but it doesn't feel like stuffed and too busy. So I think it's a pretty decent episode. I'd give it a B.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm going to give it a B+, because there are some plot holes, and we had a lot of fun talking about some of that stuff. But ultimately, it's as should be when he gets new power. It's fun. You know, like that's I love Heat. I love X-Ray. I love that kind of stuff where it's like, hey, he has a new crazy power. How does a normal person, you know, even with somebody with superpowers, deal with something like this? And they lean into the fun of the absurdity kind of what Super Breath is. I think giving him making him sick and giving him a cold and a sneeze, no pun intended, it was a smart way to have him learn that. Because how else are you going to learn that? Right, because he's never sneezed before. He's never been sick. He's Superman. That makes sense. So he sneezed. That happens. Ergo,
I guess it could have been like a birthday party incident where he just...
Oh, man. Blow out this candle.
Just destroys everything.
Wow, that's good. Oh, boy, that's good. So, yeah, so B for you, a B+ for me. Let's go to the tally board. Just a couple of things on the tally board here. We have a From Metropolis +1 because Lex tells Lana that PI is, you know, the best in Metropolis. That brings us to 16 so far. And then we have a +1 for episode title set in episode. That brings us to 41. So there you have it. And then the Bechdel test is a pass because Lois and Chloe talk a lot about journalism.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
There you have it. So there you go. I got to say, this isn't as good as to me as Heat or X-Ray. But as far as superpowers episodes go, this is right after those. It's way better than Whisper. I think Whisper's like the worst one.
Yeah, so, I think you're right, yeah.
So yeah, like I said, I look forward to us talking about the cellophane S and the memory erasing kiss here as we as we continue.
I can't wait. Dan. I'm looking forward to it.
So if people want to find you out there on the internet, Dan, where can they find you?
Oh, Twitter's the best place. You can find me there, @OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word. find me with my two lovely co-hosts on SETI Alpha 3, which is a Star Trek-themed podcast. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's a lot of stuff going on in Star Trek right now. Plenty of shows. In fact, CBS All Access is, I think, going to put us in a Star Trek lockdown where we're going to be getting new Star Trek for the next 47 years. So we have lots to talk about. So check us out there on the Nerd Party, and it's a fun show. So,
absolutely. As for me, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue. You can find us on Twitter at UFP Earth or at Franchise Fatigue. We talk about movies, remakes, reboots, sequels, and when franchises get fatigued. And finally, here at the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville. And you can send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. That's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next time talking about Wither. And until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Cavante Chillis, Dallas Hernandez, Casey Cochran, James Bandini II, Darren Kirscht, Lex Ledger, Joey Deanberg, JJ Hodges, Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Thomas Navin, Joe McIndoe, Steve Rogers, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sachi, Rachel Miller, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Joe Rothacher, Zachary Burkhalter, DJ Duina, Corey Moore, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fanzler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clunk Kant, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Coso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Anthony Anderson, and Jasmine McGilly. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.